We now talk with Richard Florida, professor at the University of Toronto and NYU, senior editor of The Atlantic, author of several books, including The Rise of the Creative Class and The Great Reset, How the Post-Crash Economy Will Change the Way We Live and Work. He wrote an important piece in The Atlantic on the geography of gun deaths. Terrible tragedies cause us to search for deeper answers. And this was after... It's amazing how many of these there have been, the horrible tragedy in Tucson. And what he did was did a study of all of the states. It's commonly assumed that mental illness or stress levels trigger gun violence. Is that borne out at the state level? What about gun laws in various states, those that have... gun control legislation, what form does that take? Does it make a difference in terms of the number of deaths that we see in states due to firearms? And what we think is the case may not be what statistical research it shows is true about what is the case. So Richard is joining us. We'll continue phone calls for him. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and the Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Richard Florida, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, just to do a follow-up, we just spoke with the police chief of Oak Creek, Wisconsin, where the Sikh temple shooting took place, and also with the mayor of Racine, who for a long time has been working with a group, Mayors Against Illegal Guns. I'd like for you to say whether or not you believe that we are at a moment in American history, after many, many years of experiencing these horrendous events, where we are going to very seriously have a very deep conversation about how we can become safe.
Yes. I have never seen, having had interest in gun violence and its geographic variation for some time, although I'm not a criminologist or a huge student of the subject. I mean, I've tracked this as a person and as a scholar for two decades. I have never seen anything like this. And my good friend Andrew Gelman, the statistician and political scientist at Columbia, just blogged about it, and he shot it to me early this morning, his blog post. And he said much the same thing. He said there were three factors. One, the fact that this involved little kids. And I think, when you see the president tearing up about this, and any parent, anyone who's around young children, it's unconscionable. The second factor, I think, is that it's happened so frequently. And I think people are just sick and tired, plain old sick and tired. But the third factor that Gelman pointed out is where it happened. Not only young children, not only, coming on the heels of all these other horrid tragedies, but the fact that it happened in leafy, bucolic Connecticut, which is not a place which is associated with the gun culture. Those factors, Gelman suggests, have tipped us over. And I think this is true. I think when you see Joe Scarborough getting red in the face and angry about this, so, yeah, I don't even think I'm optimistic. I think this time I wrote a tweet that said change is going to come. I think it is, and I think it's going to be faster than most people think. The only thing I worry about, that it's not going to be deep enough, that we're going to do something that gets at a piece of the problem but doesn't cut deep enough into what is, frankly, Americans' obsessions with guns.
What is deep enough?
Well, in my view, we have to root guns out of our society. I think when you can no longer send your children to a school in a leafy suburb and feel safe, when you no longer feel safe anywhere you are, and I split my time between the United States. I'm an American, grew up in America, teach at NYU, write for The Atlantic, but also have a joint appointment, my main appointment, in fact, at the University of Toronto. I feel absolutely no fear in Toronto. It is the wildest thing to be an American, walking around the streets of Toronto. Now, of course, Toronto has car theft, and of course, homes get burglarized. But there's not a guy packing an assault rifle, with a multiple clip magazine. Very few people are armed and dangerous. They're guns for hunters. So I think we have to root these guns out of our society. But that's my bias. I think where we'll get to is more bans on assault weapons. more bans on handguns, and I think we'll finally break the back of this notion that more guns make us safer. I think that's ending, but I go right for the root of the problem, and I think, you know, in a civilized society, there's very little need for people to walk around armed and dangerous, and in a civilized society, I think we could all be safer with a lot fewer guns, but I think that my belief and my view is probably not, we're not going to go nearly as far as I would like to see us go.
Yeah, and what's interesting is in the last couple of years, what's happened is that more and more people are allowed to go around with guns on their hips or in their purses. Concealed carry, so many states have that now. A lot of people are just walking around with guns.
You know, we have this mythology in our society, and we're going to hear it again, that guns make us safer, and if we had guns in our schools, they'd make us safer. And of course, they wouldn't. But I think, and you know, there's still, we know from press reports, people have been rushing out to buy themselves assault rifles and to buy themselves concealed handguns because they're fearful. But I do think, you know, we have to remember that the United States is way, way of an outlier on this. And we are a great country. We're an entrepreneurial country. We're an innovative country. We're a country of individual freedoms. But on this one, we're way outside the game of any other, you know, Mike Bloomberg said it best, of any other advanced industrialized country. We're just way of an outlier. And then sooner or later, you know, we'll reel back in. And I do think change is going to come fast. And once, you know, once change is being made, yeah, the good part of this, and I think this is interesting for listeners, the really interesting part of this story, and I've been writing about this for Atlantic Cities, is that the murder rate in big cities is way down. That's the good part of the story. The bad part of the story is that the places we thought were safe, our bucolic, upscale suburbs, are where these mass shootings and mass killings. So we're confronted with this contradiction. And I think when we could blame, you know, murder rates on urban centers, you know, which had dangerous people and drug dealers and criminals, we could wish this away. But the fact that these mass shootings and mass killings, you know, happen in affluent, largely white, bucolic suburbs by troubled young people who come from what look to be good families, I think this is going to cause a big introspection. This is no longer an urban problem. Crime's getting better in urban centers. It's a problem, I called it on the Atlantic Cities, an everywhere issue now. It's an issue for Americans everywhere in every place we live. It's no longer just an urban issue. And I think that's going to cause the change.
Mm-hmm. Do we need to understand or not those people who in large numbers are going to stores and buying assault weapons as a result of this tragedy, those people who are fearful that their guns will be taken away from them? Do we need to understand those people, and do we need to put them at the table or not?
I don't think so. I mean, again, I'm not trying to be cruel on this, but, you know, I'll follow a person like Mike Bloomberg, even though I'm probably much further left than the mayor. I think this is a right to the safety and security of our kids and our families. And in a democratic society, the rights of protecting, you know, I think this is what our real homeland security is about, the real security of our children is about, protecting them from this kind of thing. And guns do just horrifying damage. And the fact, these guns were bought legally. they were in a home by someone who was an avid gun collector, the mom, that were used in this horrible shooting. You know, Connecticut is a state with fairly serious gun control. I think we've got to go to the root of the problem. And, you know, over time, we're going to have to get these guns out of our society. There's no place for these guns in a civilized society laying around the house. So, you know, I think we've got to go further. And I think it's an issue of keeping our people and our kids safe and secure. But again, we're going to have a debate. You know, my views are not necessarily going to predominate. But I can tell everyone listening in that I just feel a heck of a lot safer when I'm in Toronto than I do when I'm in New York or Miami or L.A. or Chicago or even any American suburb. I feel a level of safety and a lack of anxiety that I never feel in the United States. And I think America needs to give its people a safe and secure society and community. And our kids, we owe it to our kids. You know, the president said that. We owe it to our kids to live in a place that they can feel safe and secure. They don't have to be worried about this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Your state-by-state analysis said that you found no statistical association between gun violence and the proportion of neurotic personalities. The images of a drug-crazed gunmen are commonplace. We assume that guns and drug abuse are presumed to go together, but again, that is not the case. So what is the case?
Well, first I want to say something to everyone listening in, that the NRA and other groups have suppressed good information and data on guns and violence, and we lack good crime data in America. This has come out in every single report that our data are not very comparable between states and cities, and it's hard to make a judgment about what causes what. Well, what I did was say, I agree with all of that, but I want to take as best a look I can at the facts among states and among cities and metro areas. And what we found, and folks listening in, this is crude. This isn't the most high level of science. Of course, people can do better research, but to do so, we've got to get better data. What I found is our common priors, like mental illness rates or states that have high levels of drug abuse or drug crimes, these things were not associated with violent crimes. And in fact, when I did the analysis, prompted by a young man named Harry Morose at the Next American City, I went back and looked at this for cities and metro areas and had an updated piece. When I looked at this thing for city and metros and looked at murder rates, he had better data. We could look at gun murders, gun suicides, other gun-related deaths, and so forth. What I found is that they were associated with poverty, with less advantaged economies, and not associated with mental illness, but also on the, I guess on the bright side, that gun control, whether those were trigger locks and other forms of gun control, did have an effect. States which had these measures tended to have lower rates of gun-related violence. Now I will add for folks listening in, I think what's happening there is the states that have more of these measures tend to be more affluent, more advantaged, have more knowledge-based economies, have populations that will tolerate more restrictions on guns. But the fact of the matter is it appears to me that at least in those states that have these characteristics, the rates of gun violence are lower. So yes, I think it makes a difference, but I think in light of what happened in Connecticut, we just have to go much, much further.
Phone calls, we'll start taking them in a moment at 800-486-8655. You can always leave a message, too, at talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Thinking that we need something a little different, the second hour of our program today, the managing editor of Rolling Stone, to review the magazine's list of game changers from politics to music in 2012. Richard Florida, professor, University of Toronto, and NYU senior editor at The Atlantic, our guest this hour, and we start our calls with Mike in Racine. Hi, Mike.
Hi. You know, I'm really challenged when I hear these kinds of programs. We really need to get the people that have no biases to be looking at what's going on with these mass shootings and so forth. I mean, your guest here has laid out a premise and looked at some data. Crudy admitted and so forth. And he admits he needs to be done by probably criminologists and so forth. But one of the challenges that I see here is, when we look at this and we just leap to the reaction that it's this or it's that, we miss the bigger picture. We miss the bigger data. For example, up until 1968, you could purchase through the mail virtually any firearm made, with the exception of fully automatic machine guns. For the most part, you could buy military rifles. You could buy the precursor to the AR-15. You could do it through the mail, no background checks, no nothing. Go back and try to find the number of mass shootings that were done using those kinds of weapons anywhere in that time period from when semi-automatics were first made way back in the turn of the last century. I mean, we need to be looking at other issues.
Okay, let's get Richard's response. Richard?
Well, We are the only country where this occurs. We have the highest rate of murder in the advanced world by a wide margin. We have hundreds of millions of guns in the hands of our people. I think the first prior now is get rid of the guns. Then we can talk about all the other problems. But I think if we didn't have the guns, we would have lots of people who have issues. And clearly we have an aggressive, anxiety-ridden, isolated society. Sociologists have told this. Very stress-ridden society, particularly on young people, and I'm guessing because of the profile of these shooters on young men. We have to deal with that. But the fact of the matter is we are the only country which has this kind of gun-related violence. So it seems to any sentient person, and in fact the Republicans, the Independents, and Democrats that have looked at this in a sentient manner, are not receiving massive lobbying funds from the NRA and are not part of a gun lobby, that it's time to get the guns out of our society. It is the most common sense I can't, you know, my mother and my father who worked in a factory, there is no more common sense things than this. When you see a country that is unique and alone in the world that has this problem, you go for the root of the problem. The root of the problem is the guns. Everything else is a distraction from the violence problem. Those other problems, sociological, psychological, stress exist, and we have to address them. I can talk more about that. I know a great deal about that. But the problem we're confronting is an armed and deadly population, and the guns are killing people. So let's deal with the problem first, and I think that's where attention's going to – everyone's going to try to distract this mental health issue and all of this and that. But I think attention is focused where it needs to be attention. We've got to get the guns out of our society, and it's going to start. I don't know if it's going to go far enough, but it is clearly about to start.
Brent in Duluth, Minnesota.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of a funny sort. I make custom rifles for a living. And I'm a sustaining member of the Brady Campaign to End Gun Violence. So I've been able to sit down politely at the campfires of both camps and chit-chat with people on both sides. And I'll tell you what we need. First of all, we got to fix our background check system. It's a joke. Okay? 40% of sales or firearms transfers occur in this country without a background check. It's just like going into an airport where 6 out of every 10 passengers go through the security line, and another 4 can pick to not go through security. Would you fly out of an airport like that?
Well, do you think that that's something that we're going to do right away, Richard, is require background checks on all?
Yes, and this all works. I mean, the crude statistics that I've looked at, it all works. That's going to help. Will it eliminate the problem? No. But trigger locks, background checks, all of these measures will help reduce the problem and get us back on track to being a less violent society. But sooner or later, we just have to end the proliferation of guns. We have to end the proliferation of assault-like weapons in our society. Even looking at the darn thing onto TV this morning terrified me, scared me to death. I have to end the proliferation of people running around with handguns, conceal and carry. And, of course, people should be able to own a gun in their home for hunting or other purposes or to collect guns because they like the things. But, no, to have this kind of hundreds of millions of arms on our street, people running around in their cars and, you know, on their person, in their purses, is just insane. And the notion that it makes us safer – we're loony. I mean, it suggests a society that's kind of gone loony. So, and I think we're there. I think as a society, we're there. Moms and dads across the country, granddads and grandmoms, you know, are saying, we don't want our kids to be exposed to this. They should never have to come to face with a gun. And the way to do that is to get the guns out of our society.
Thanks, Brent, for the call. Michael in Danbury, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good, good. This is a good conversation. Some people are not listening. We forget that one of the strongest gun laws happens to be in the state of Connecticut, that these guns were purchased by a single woman legally and were in her home. I think that the guest has brought out a point that he's also overlooking, is that the root of the problem is the gun doesn't discharge on its own. The root of the problem are the individuals behind the weapons, and it is, in my opinion, if you'll notice in these mass shootings and killings, these people, the gunmen or gunwomen, if you will, are in the middle class or upper middle class, very angry people, easily detected, often consulting mental health support and so forth. That was true in Arizona, it was true on the university in Virginia, and your guest is wrong. We're not the only country. He forgets that 67 people, young children, at a camp in Norway were picked off.
Richard, Florida.
Oh, I don't forget. These isolated incidents happen lots of places, and the president said we can't stamp all of them out, but we can make guns a lot less scarce in our society and bring down our rate of violence. I mean, there are a lot of isolated, angry, anxiety-prone people. I think the transition to the kind of economy we're in, I think the role of isolation in our suburbs, you know, I would advise every mom or dad. I talked about this in a post I wrote for The Atlantic where I talked to one of my colleagues in the wake of Columbine, and he said to me, I put my kids in urban schools Because in urban schools, this kind of mass shooting, where we think we're crime-filled, is much less likely. What happens in an isolated, homogeneous, suburban environment is these poor kids internalize all the problems and turn on themselves instead of being able to externalize it on their race or ethnicity, in-group or out-group. So one thing I would do is keep a more urban orientation. I think the suburbs are the places that face this. But the point of fact is if somebody is really sick and really deranged, and has a gun, an assault rifle, they can take out a lot of people. If somebody is really sick and mentally ill and deranged and doesn't have a gun, they can stamp their heels and yell and scream and try to hurt them with their fist or an blunt object, but they can't do this kind of damage. The fact that this young man had access to these kind of guns in the home is what enabled him to kill all these people. So we have to deal with the problems of isolation, anxiety, aggression in our society. But first and foremost, get rid of the guns, get rid of the assault weapons, get rid of the stuff that can kill masses of people, and we'll be a lot better off. And, you know, I know we're going to have this debate, but I can tell you, I talked to lots of people. I talked to lots of cab drivers. I talked to lots of young moms. I have never seen anything like this. This is like what happened with the civil rights movement, the women's rights movement. People have had it up to here in this society with the guns. And you know, I keep thinking about MAD, the Mothers Against Drunk Driving. You know, one can imagine a social movement burgeoning in this society, which is moms against the guns. And we want our kids safe. And I have never seen young women, young mothers, so angry and put upon in my life. So I think it's coming. I think we'll hear all the excuses. I think the president has the mandate and the will to do this. I think he can be backed by people who from the other party, like Mike Bloomberg. I think it's coming, and I think the guns are going to start to go away. And I think that's a good thing for our society. We can have a conversation, but I think the tide has turned.
Stanley in Augusta, hi.
Yes, hello. Earlier, the mayor had made a statement that we needed to stop people from buying automatic weapons and large clips. And unless you are a holder of a special FFL license that allows you to own automatic weapons, you already cannot buy automatic weapons. And I bring this up as a demonstration of the inability of the sides to talk about it. The mayor states he's been working on this issue for years, and yet he doesn't have even a basic understanding of firearms. We are not going to be able to have this conversation until both sides at least have a basic understanding and a platform to work from.
Stanley, are there guns that are on the market right now that you think people should not be able to buy?
No, because I don't believe the appearance of a gun is what makes it dangerous. All of the people who describe assault weapons describe a gun with a folding stock, a gun that looks like it might be military. If you took that gun, that exact same mechanical mechanism, put it in a wood stock with a sling and a deer scope on it, people would go, oh, that's just a hunting rifle.
For the first time today, we're starting to hear from people who feel pretty strongly about their guns and think that this issue is not guns, it's mental health, it's whatever it is. How strong is the opposition, do you think, Richard?
You know, I'm not an expert in the politics and lobbying, and I've read the research. I understand about well-organized special interest groups and how they can overcome a diffuse and diffused majority. But, you know, this time is different. It's not going away, mm-hmm. and the folks on the other side are scared. There is no doubt that they are scared. I see this as a social movement. It's a social movement of an advanced society. Just the way giving voting rights to women and to African Americans and giving rights to gay people are saying, our kids have to be safe. Enough's enough. And we'll start it slowly, but enough's enough. I'm 55 years old. I've lived in this country. I've witnessed gun violence. I saw the riots in Newark and in New York firsthand as a boy. I have never seen a society so poised to change. And these things happen very quickly. People have said, enough's enough. Make all the excuses you want. Blame it on isolation, aggression, troubled people. it's not enough. And no matter how much money is pumped into the system, it won't overcome this. It may not happen in a week. It may not happen in 2 weeks. But the United States has reached a tipping point. It's quite clear in the way our people feel, in the way the polling is going, in the remarks of our president, of Republicans, of independents. And the great thing about it, you know, I hate to say this, the great thing about it is once you get a guy like Mike Bloomberg, who has infinite resources and can begin to counter the effects of the lobbying and hold them at least in check or equalize them, yeah, we're going to hear excuses. We're going to hear people making all of these things, but it's not going to work.
Richard, thank you so much for being with us. Richard Florida, our guest this hour, professor at the University of Toronto and NYU, senior editor for The Atlantic. We also thank John Edwards, police chief in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, and Mayor John Dickert from Racine for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers for doing a lot of last-minute production for this hour, which was a good one.